Welcome back, everybody, for a new episode of Future Bytes. We are on the Hackensack Media stage in Manhattan, New York City. And today I have two fantastic ladies with me, and I'm kind of like starstruck because I really love their work. We have Rosalie Yu and Emily Balz. This is a very different approach when we talk about the food, because you're doing art with food. You are at the same time technologists, futuristics, and you're trying to approach food in a way that is unconventional and different. I had the pleasure of working with you already once, Emily, on my little live stream show where we played with ice cream and music and that side of the sensory experience. Looking forward to see eventually your cotton candy machine, because that is something that I really want to see. I haven't had the opportunity to see your work live, so I'm going to start with you, Rosalie. So tell me a little bit about yourself and what are you doing and what brought you there?
So hi, I'm Rosalie. I'm currently a creative technologist and artistic fellow at the Columbia Art Journalism School. So what I do is I bring new technology to the student, to the faculty, to see how they can tell stories differently. So I do a lot of work with immersive media, mm-hmm. with augmented reality, virtual reality. I do a lot of 3D printing and 3D scanning.
Okay.
And they also support my personal work. So the work I just finished is for 2 years of time, I 3D scan desserts before I eat them.
Okay.
So I have a whole library of desserts, and then I put them into a virtual virtual
theater. Is
that
because you have a sweet tooth? Did you start with desserts because you have a sweet tooth?
Yeah, so it's a reflection that I have, that I find out my family eats a lot of sugar more than other people. It's very weird, and also find out this long history of sugar trade in my country, Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
Was colonized by Dutch people, like Japanese people, and then is always used for a place to produce sugar.
Okay.
So kind of reflect on that, and also the process of scanning is very real, ritualistic. So, and kind of connect back to the ritualistic aspect of sugar that our relationship to
it is
sugar.
Nice that you're able to, you know, it's kind of like similar to what I'm trying to do, using technology to preserve a heritage that otherwise it has been lived only by, you know, people that are much older than mm-hmm. us right now. So we do need to establish a new form to be able to translate that message and making mm-hmm. sure that the next generation understand where you're coming from. Is that being successful so far?
I think people have different reactions. Some people are like, oh, delicious. I was like, well, that's not really the point. But I think for me, it's really we all have this learned relationship to a food, and in my case, to a sugar, and that's passed down over generations and sometimes passed down through a higher class.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for me to do this project for 2 years really changed the way I view sugar, and then hopefully.
How many desserts have you scanned? Do you have an exact number?
I have a lot, but the one that turned out, there's a lot of different kinds of situation. I'm scanning them sometimes in the theater, sometimes in the bar. Sometimes I have to take them to
weird
like places.
Oh, like multiple? You take them around?
Yeah,
I
have to
nice.
Take them around. And maybe 260.
Okay.
In my 3D gallery.
And what are you going to do without afterwards? Are you trying to build a project around it? Or
so,
for the moment, you're just archiving it?
Yeah, so actually, they are shown in Chicago right now. They are 3D printed. And all the digital models are also, I put them into virtual reality so we can view them.
Okay.
And so you're in the room, you're surrounded by them. And when you look at them, they start morphing. And you are also put into it. One dessert, and it's like it's supposed to. I hope to make people rethink about just usually how they view dessert and.
Well, to me, this is part of the future of publishing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big questions that we have now in the industry is that what's after cookbooks? You know, cookbooks mm-hmm. are wonderful. I have about 1,000 of them. I use maybe 3 of those. I read them here and there. I get inspired. I am an avid collector. But the message is barely translating for me and I am in the industry. It doesn't touch my kids. You know, the next generation of users will be really disconnected by the publishing industry. So if there's a way that you want to keep a story alive, you need to figure out a new way to deliver it, which is kind of like what Emily is doing with technology. Like, you're finding ingredients and you're creating playfulness around it so people connect with them. Would you like to elaborate?
Yeah, so I also work in creative technology, mostly as an interactive artist. So I also find great delight in sweet things. And I think we probably all agree. Yeah. Mostly, I think, on the side that I think what's interesting that you're bringing so much cultural heritage to it, I also think of it from a sensory experience, that it really is the pleasure of eating a sweet puts us in an emotion that is happy, that is delightful, right? That opens us up usually to a lot of possibilities because of its kind of tickly, effervescent yes. nature when we eat it. So I really like the flavor profile of sweet, but also I like it for its emotional benefits.
Would you say that also sugar, just because it's a safe play against, let's say, cured meats, you know, of all the ingredients that you can think in the world, I would say that, you know, sweets are probably the ones that are, I don't want to say less scary, but, you know, most appreciated by everybody. We all like sugar in a way or in another. I mean, I had a junkie breakfast with like a Twix bar this morning.
Wow.
And that to me is like extremely sinful, because people know me for like, you know, my healthy habits.
The hidden life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think sweets are not necessary, right?
Right.
We don't need them to live. Sugar is one of the quickest hits of energy that we can get. But it is a place where we exist in fantasy and in imagination. And so with what I do, I take traditional things like ice cream cones, cotton candy machines, and I use technology to transform our relationship to them. So one of the examples was this lickable ice cream orchestra that I made.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, that came to your last show, and you lick ice cream and you make music by licking. And just that switch of a sensory experience, I think, starts to open up all sorts of new possibilities in how we perceive not only our sweets, but also the world around us.
Absolutely. Is there a new installation that you're working on? Is this something new in the making?
Well, I have one installation right now called the Flavor Factory at the Cooper Hewitt National Design Museum.
Okay.
That's part of a sensory design exhibit, and it's a really great show. It explores how design and the senses collaborate to create new experiences.
You need to go check it out.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what is that about? Can you describe it?
The Flavor Factory?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's a mini factory. So it's like my child's mind of like my Willy Wonka factory I always wanted
Wonderful.
To live in. So it's a series of gauges and large scale objects like oversized ice cream cones, again, popsicles, like a stove, and you turn knobs and then it changes the appearance.
Okay.
So it's a lot of screens in the back. So you change from an aspect that looks delicious to disgusting, and there's sound that accompanies that.
Oh, okay.
And so you get, hopefully,
it's like both sides of the metal. Sugar is delicious for you, but too much sugar
exactly.
is going to knock you down.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it questions our relationship to how we perceive, once again, food in the world around us.
This is actually a question that I would like to throw at the both of you. In the work that you have done, how do you see people's perception being modified? Do you see curiosity? Do you see interest? Is that a motivator for you, trying to generate a reaction in somebody? How's it been, the feedback so far?
For me, I think because people know whenever I eat dessert, I have to scan them. So mm-hmm. they kind of see it kind of like a performance I put off of them. So they sometimes will make weird dessert for me because they know that will live in my data library. I don't know if I can say it here, they will make a dick cake. I will have to scan them. So yeah, it does change. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone wants to one-up each other. Who gets to be in your library? I think for me, one thing that probably comes up for you as well is that there, with the work that I do, there's always a sense of wonder that results. And that for me is the goal. Is how do we get back to that place of constantly re-seeing our world and ourselves once again for the first time?
Well, the musical ice cream was a definitely step up from just the regular ice cream.
I hope so, yeah. Never before has your tongue made such noises.
And, you know, since she started talking about scanning desserts, all I can think of is 3D sugar printers.
Yeah.
Have you tried printing something or delivering a file to somebody to get one of your scans printed?
I thought about it. I haven't done it, but now I'm printing them in toxic plastic.
Okay.
So, so it's funny because it looks exactly like dessert, but it's not edible. It's like getting
are
further
they colored,
and further away.
Do you use colored plastics or filaments, or are you coloring afterwards?
Some of them I color afterwards.
Okay.
But I also like the material I use. It's like a durable resin. Mm-hmm. And some people say it looks like a melted snowball with a hint of urine. So it's look frosted. And
yeah, that takes away from the whole food idea.
Yeah, which is my intention. Right, so I think that's good. Yeah.
Have I ever printed anything? Is that the question?
Yes. Have you prayed with printers?
Yes. I work out of the New Lab for Emerging Technologies in the Brooklyn Navy Yard.
Okay.
And I've done several dinners there. And one of the dinners, we ended up taking a dimensional model of the building itself, which is a huge warehouse,
inside,
right?
Gigantic.
So ships used to be built there way back in the day as a naval terminal. And we shrunk it down and printed it in sugar for coffee service.
Nice.
So everyone was eating the building at the end.
Like candies, how big it was?
Yeah, well, the actual thing was,
I don't know. It was almost like a candy, like a real candy.
It was a candy, like a sugar cube size.
How do you see this job changing the industry? Are we changing the industry? Are we reinventing something different? Are we adding to it? Or do you see the use of technology and this push of creativity, because ultimately we're not preserving heritage here. Here we're really like opening up our minds and trying to do something that is different. Do you see applications in terms of like real life, or this is a pure play trying to connect people around food and art?
I think when you say no cultural heritage is being preserved, I would then argue, how do we make cultural heritage? We invent, we imagine, we create.
Agreed.
So I think that it's less about preserving. It's more about developing and igniting, which is what humans have done since the dawn of time. You know, we are so resilient. We are so creative. We are so horrible and awful at the same time. But I think that when I see what technology is doing right now in the food industry, it maybe the formats are new, right? It's digital technology instead of mechanical technology. But it's not a new thing that we're doing as humans. I think what we are seeing, though, is the next wave of imagination and creativity that might affect our food behaviors, our food distribution, our agricultural systems. We work probably in a more fantastic way. So we're igniting imagination and delight and play.
Well, you're the dreamers. Yeah. You know, we need farmers and movie makers at the same time.
Yeah. We need dessert. You know, we need steak, but we also need dessert.
And what about you? Do you think there's going to be like a bigger shift because of the work that you're doing?
I think the shift I see is more horizontal than vertical.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like our relationship to food is changing, because you used to be only certain group of people have the power for production. And now, such as 3D printing technology, it is shifting to more small household production. Mm-hmm. And so you will see creativity that's more on the personal level. So I think, yeah, that's more interesting.
I mean, that is exactly the reason why I thought about the 3D printers, because eventually I would love one day to have a connected 3D sugar printer in my kitchen and being able to access a library like yours and say, okay, you know, let's do one of Rosalie's desserts today and, you know, pass it on to the daughter that is going to decorate. And it's so different than grandma making the apple pie. Yeah.
But would you want different. The 3D meat printer? That's the real question.
I would love it. Well, you know, it is so strange, because when I arrived here, and also in my first TV show, in my cookbooks, like I am a terrible carnivore. I thrive on proteins. I come from farmland where cattle was not really abused, was just the cattle that we raised there locally. So I never connected my nutritional habits with a certain kind of cruelty or imposition on another species. Then I moved to California, where all of a sudden I realized the extensive amount of land that is devoted to cattle. And that's the meat that end up in the 24-hour grocery store at $8 a pound, which is impossible. It's economically dangerous. It's not healthy. And my habits are changing, because maybe I'm getting a little older, but also because I'm talking to a lot of people like you. I think there is a little bit of a shift that is due to the fact that we're overpopulated. Resources are less, but some people are being more creative. So if one day she has a scan of a lab protein burger and I do have a printer that can deliver that, why not? I'll give it a shot. And trust me, like if you asked me 3-4 years ago, I would have thrown the microphone at you. I was like, what are you talking about? Many years ago, actually, I had the luck of meeting Michael Mann's brother, because my wife was doing a movie with Michael Mann, and we went to their house, and his brother is an incredible hippie. I remember his beard, you know, nice and white. And he was working on lab meat substitutes, and that's like 15 years ago. And my first approach was like, what is he thinking? Like, this stuff will not, like, who would eat stuff like that? And now I am a perfect candidate because it's not that I've been convinced. I think that when it's a matter of food and sustainability, it also has something that just needs to click within you. But let's not be too serious. All of us, you know, the meat printing, it's actually like printing a stick is really something that I would love to do.
The ice cream cone, the meat ice cream cone. Now we have a collision of all worlds.
Well, now you can put dessert and meat together. Is there something in technology right now that you ladies are looking at as a possible new moment of art for the work that you do? What's after scanning? Have you thought about it, or right now that is taking your energy, your heart, and your mind?
I think I'm still very invested in 3D scanning because I found the process more interesting than what I get, and because the method I do to scan is using photos, mm-hmm. and there is this long history established around photography, so there's a lot of things I can play with it. And
aside from the archiving, do you see any mm-hmm. practical effect of the work that you're doing? Like, if there is a way, do you see a way to put the work that you're doing to use?
I think because it's so easy to sample from reality.
Mm-hmm.
For example, for 3D food printing, you can just replicate anything that you see in this room, right. and then you can turn that into food.
Absolutely.
And yeah, what do you think?
In terms of applications for 3D printing, or the next type?
Well, no, in general, yeah. Like, you know, I would like to know what sure. is next after your museum, or if there's any other technology that you're looking at. It's like, oh my gosh, I cannot wait to be doing something with that.
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, I exist more in the world of sensing technologies. So anything that allows a material to sense us so we change our relationship to it is interesting to me. I think there's a lot right now in terms of facial recognition that is fascinating and both highly dangerous.
How would you merge facial recognition and your food art?
Well, I'm curious to see.
You're clearly already thinking about it, because I can see it in
your eyes. I can't tell you all my secrets, right. Come on. But here's what I am interested in about it, is that our faces are usually our portals to our emotions. How, you know, you look angry, you look happy. So what if we could have an emotional relationship with our food that was based on how we look? And would that allow us to see ourselves in what we eat? Could we change our own relationship? So can the food change in front of me based on my mood that's appearing?
Or maybe can select one of your prints to be delivered according to the face.
Exactly.
So you need to have a little bit of a library to be able to kind of like deliver
the feedback. This is the beginning of a long collaboration.
So, what kind of dessert am I? If you were to scan me and then reprint it, what kind of dessert am I?
We're talking about beef ice cream.
Oh, gosh. That's so weird.
Spanish.
Beef ice cream. Oh, that's a hashtag.
Tallow crème glacée.
Is there something that you have seen happening in home kitchens, where the work that you do gets fascinated or inspired by it? Like in the regular kitchen, is your kitchen at home different from a regular kitchen or my kitchen? Is your artwork impacted the way that you live at home and work with the food? Or this is just an extrapolation of your mind when you, let's say, I'm going to work and I'm doing something with food and technology?
Yeah, maybe the one thing that we share is that my mixing spoons are drumsticks as well.
Ah.
I don't know if you have those. Someone else out there probably has those. So that's one thing.
A whisk mounted on a drumstick?
Yeah, they have little drumstick ends. So sometimes we play like cans, you know? I think that we probably would all love to imagine that our home kitchens are these like fantastic, crazy places. My home kitchen is pretty normal. The thing that I would say is different are some of the ingredients that are there. So what pops up in my spice rack, you know, usually has non-flavor purposes sometimes. You know, there are Pop Rocks in there. There's maltodextrin in there. There are things that maybe a more professional cook would be using in a restaurant in terms of molecular gastronomy. I also have at home.
Oh, that's cool.
The other thing that is, I think, a secret that not many people know about is that I label all my spices according to sounds that have no relationship whatsoever.
So only you know what's in the cabinet.
Yeah, but I like labeled them with a label maker. Bzzz, ow, psh, ee, and it makes me have this very funny, playful relationship to everyday spices.
Is that the sound that they do in your head or the sound when they hit the pan? Is that their real sound? Are you trying to kind of like give letters to a real sound? Or is it just, again, your mind?
They're my world and my mind. Like cinnamon, I don't know how it goes. I feel like it does that when I
eat
it.
You're a cinnamon talker, a spice talker.
It's my synesthetic labeling of my spices. That's what it is.
And you, Rosalie, anything strange in your kitchen? You know, if you forget the 20 pounds of sugar.
I'm not a big cook, but I do eat with my eyes now. And I eat like a computer. I would, whenever I start eat something in my kitchen, I will think about if the lighting is right, if my computer will like this glaze on the top, would a scam come out? So, So I would say I decorate my kitchen so it has nice lighting. Whenever I need to eat a dessert, it needs to scan well.
That's cool. You know, one of the things that is actually interests me a lot of the playfulness of food is that I find it a wonderful tool to put kids in touch with food and make them understand. Because sometimes explaining them where the food comes from can be not disarming. It's not that you want to talk about the meat and talk about necessarily about the slaughterhouse, but kids are not really interested in what happens to the seed, making the wheat, making the bread. In the work that you have done technology-wise, have you experienced ways of being able to deliver a message about the food that you're working with, or is just about the art?
I think for me, some nice surprises have come out of the work, which is that specifically children are very involved in participating, and like they really want to lick, they really want to spin cotton candy, etc. But I think the part that's most surprising is that it will often change their behaviors. So it's not necessarily about the ingredient that they experience the flavor with. It's about the sound experience. It's about the funny movement, right? And some kids then start tasting flavors that they otherwise would not have wanted to taste before. Right. So adding that layer of technology is a great way to change behavior.
They wouldn't have the problem with her work. It's all sugar.
Yeah.
They will try probably everything, right?
I just trying to make sure I understand your question right. Can you just repeat it again?
If the work that you have done has showed any didactical opportunities, an opportunity to share knowledge about food with the younger generation, if it carries a message or if it's something that you're just trying to do for yourself as an art expression of yourself.
Yeah, I think for me is to really show how sugar for the past few centuries has this hidden power that's always preserved in that, but we don't think about it anymore. So I think for me to kind of show this archive, my personal archive, is kind of to reflect onto this larger collective memories and to show people what is there, what's left when you don't see this dessert as dessert.
Right. Well, yeah. Sugar of all the ingredients that we have in the world is probably one responsible with coffee and cocoa in invasions, deforestation, trades, slavery. Like, is one of those key ingredients that are in history books because certain wars were fought because of those ingredients. So I absolutely understand it. Ladies, I thank you so much for the time that you took to come on my show. I am very excited about the work you're doing. I really wish you the best. I am looking forward to go to the museum and check out your place, but I want to collect all the information. Shall we say once again, where is your work so people can listen to it and go see it? So Rosalie, where can people come and see your work?
Right now it's in Chicago in this gallery called Platform 904.
Okay.
And then I will have work in Taiwan in November in the old Japanese sugar factory.
Wonderful.
And then,
are you on social media? Do you have an Instagram handle?
Yeah, it's just Rosalie U, Rosalie U.
Okay, so let's go in and let's press some likes. And you, Emily?
As I said, an installation at the Cooper Hewitt National Design Museum.
I forgot the Cooper Hewitt Museum, okay.
On the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And then later in August, some work will be showing up in the Meatpacking District.
Okay.
And this fall, to be determined, but I think the Ojai Valley of California, which is pretty idyllic.
Wonderful.
So all
yes.
that will be announced, and my Instagram is my name, Emily Baltz, but it's E-M-I-L-I-E.
Yes, yeah. I remember that.
La mère française.
Emily, Rosalie, thank you so, so much. From the Hackensack stage in Penn Plaza, the Kumu Studio and the OG Podcast Network, this is Future Bites. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Be well. Ciao. Thank you so much again.